World Radio Program, a collaboration between 89.5 FM Bush Radio Cape Town, South Africa, and 88.7 FM WRHU Radio Hofstra University in Hempstead, New York. Broadcasting from the Bush Radio Salt River Studios in Cape Town is host me, Lydia Makhwanana. Broadcasting from WRHU Studios in Hempstead, New York, are your hosts Cody Millar and Andy Gladding. We welcome you to join us for the next hour as we celebrate the power of community radio, music, language, and culture. The world is a big place, but using the power of radio, we're bringing it right to your door. Now, Bush Radio and WRHU welcome you to the one world of community radio.
FM WRHU Hempstead, Radio Hofstra University, 88.3 WRCT Radio Carnegie Tech in Pittsburgh, and 89.5 Bush Radio Cape Town, South Africa, the mother of community radio. You are listening to the One World Community Radio Show. I'm Ricky Hubert in New York. We have Lydia Makhwanana in South Africa. Lydia, how are you today?
I am doing good, thank you, Ricky. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. We're doing a show today, and the topic is going to be literature and writing, but something is mentioned in the intro that is a prominent theme of this show is music. And for those who don't know, we have a song out now promoting the One World Show. It's gone Andy Gladding, our creator's YouTube channel. You can find it on Instagram on @OneWorldFM. And Lydia's in the video.
Oh, wow. So the music video, I shot it here in Cape Town when Andy was here. And the song, I did it when I was there in the States. Oh, it's actually such a beautiful song that Andy created about starting over and being united. So it's a very beautiful song that you can check on YouTube. Check me out on YouTube, because it's out there. I think you can download it as well. I'm not sure where you can download it, but you can download it and have it as well.
Yeah, I think so. We're going to play it at the end. We're going to play it at the end of our show. But before we get to the end of our show, we have to do the show itself. And we are so thrilled that we're joined by Bob and Lori Rosakis. Thanks so much for joining us, Bob and Lori.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us.
So what I first wanted to get into is I'm broadcasting. We are so fortunate to do this from Hofstra University, which is where both of you attended, went to school, met each other. Tell people what you studied at Hofstra and how you met, and just give us a little synopsis of what you did post-grad. We'll get into all of it during the conversation.
Okay, well, I started out as a math major, and during my fall sophomore semester, I was in a differential equations class, and I just said to myself, what am I going to do with this? And decided that what I really wanted to do was use numbers in a different way. And so I moved over to the accounting department and got a degree in accounting. I was the editor-in-chief of the yearbook Nexus for sophomore, junior, and senior years. When I graduated, I got a job at DC Comics, working first as an assistant editor, as a writer as well, and an editor, and then became the production director. Take it away.
Okay, I got to say at the top of the show, Richard, that Hofstra was extremely good to both Bob and to myself. We got a top-notch education. I started in 70, I graduated in 73. I graduated in 3 years with a double major in English and education. And it was very hard to get a job, very, very hard to get a teaching job in 73. And I got two offers, and I credit Hofstra for that. The quality of my education, the spectacular connections that I made in education, and the fact that I'm still in touch with some of the people, some of my professors, and many of our friends. I majored in English. as I said, the best professors. I've got to do a shout out for Herman Berliner and a shout out for Ruth Pregosi. Fabulous professors. I was also on the yearbook with Bob. I was on the newspaper. I was on the student judiciary board. We both worked part-time at the service desk.
That's true.
With yes. Mr. Powers. I feel a very strong connection to Hofstra. So much so that our daughter went to Hofstra because we said to her, you're never going to get a better education and meet nicer people. It was probably one of the single most formative experiences of my life. I'm very grateful to Hofstra.
Now, Lydia and I were discussing this when we were doing the prep for this interview. People like a love story. You've been married for how long?
51 years as of this past Saturday.
Oh, congratulations. That's such a milestone. So how did you meet at Hofstra?
Well, my co-editor, Arnie Leshinsky, would go around to his different classes, and girls that he thought were interesting or attractive, he would invite to become editors. Interesting.
Well, attractive.
Attractive, yeah. And Laurie walked in the office one day, and I was sitting at the desk, and she says, hi, I'm the new student life editor. And I said, oh, what class are you in with Arnie? And you were in what, jewelry making?
It was an interesting, Arnie was an interesting man. He, yep, I know. We don't want to speak ill of him because he's dead. But many of the girls, I should say, who were on the staff.
Most of the girls, there were only three guys on the staff. Yeah, it was Arnie, Gene, who was our photo editor, and me.
Patrick, Stephen.
That was later. Well, he recruited all the women for the staff.
Now, Bob, you had mentioned that you had been an accounting major, but then you went into comics. How did that happen? Give us a... How did that happen?
I was always a comic book fan. I wrote a lot of letters to the editor, had a lot of letters published in the comic books. When I was in senior year, I went up to visit DC Comics. Saw Julie Schwartz, who was one of the editors there. And I had been making crossword puzzles and word find puzzles for a comics fanzine, and I brought them along. Julie looked at them and called in Sol Harrison, who was the vice president of the company at the time. And Sol said, can you make up ones just about Superman and just about Batman? And I said, yeah. And he said, okay, well, if you do that, we'll buy them. I went home and made up 3 Superman, 3 Batman, and 3 Justice League puzzles and brought them back. And all of a sudden, I was a DC Comics freelancer. So I decided to go in that direction to see when I graduated if I could get a job at DC, which I did. I was working there as an assistant editor and then worked my way into being the production director.
And Bob, talking about your career, you've had a storied career at DC Comics, earning the nickname The Answer Man. How did that come about?
I started doing a column, did a page called The Daily Planet, which was an advertising page for the comics each week. And it was done like a newspaper page. And one of the things I added to it was a question and answer, you know, questions from the readers, what they wanted to know. It became so popular that we started doing Answer Man pages by itself. I got more mail as the Answer Man than any of the editors got for any of the comics that were being published. I had quite a bit of knowledge about the history of the company, the characters, and since I had access to the DC library, I knew where to find everything. So if there was a question I didn't have the answer to, I could go find it.
I was nicknamed the darling of the English department because I took so many classes. I think I had 60 credits in English. And so I felt that I had some kind of most favored nation status. So I went to the chairman of the department and I asked him if Bob could teach a class in comic books.
It's not at Hofstra, though.
No, it's not at
Farmingdale State.
Farmingdale State, yeah. But there are classes in comics around the country. Indiana?
All over. They have one. They have a graphic novels class at Hofstra.
That's right. We know the guy who teaches it.
Yeah. Teaches it.
Yeah.
And Bob, what would you say is kind of the creative process behind coming up with some of these comics? And how do you apply that to the classroom?
As far as coming up with an individual story idea, a lot of the things just came from things that I saw, things that I read. The first stories that I did for DC were about Robin, Batman's sidekick. Grayson had become a college student at this point and was attending Hudson University. While I was writing the Robin stories, Hudson really kind of looked like Hofstra. I believe it's still on the Unispan. if they have still have all of the profiles of the various graduates over the years. There is one about the Robin story I wrote, in which Robin battles the Joker's daughter on the Hudson University Unispan, which looks remarkably like the original one at Hofstra. I also did one that took place in the library, and there were a couple other buildings I used. A lot of others just did, you know, what was going on in the world, what was going on with the characters, etc. Sometimes you just walked in and Julie, who was usually the editor on the stuff that I was writing, you know, we just kick around ideas until we came up with something that was interesting.
And Lori, you've had a prolific teaching career. Like, how has your experience in education influenced your publications?
When I finished my BA, I rolled right into my MA, but I was teaching full time. And I could see, I was teaching in Comac, which I loved, but I could see that the population was going down drastically. So I decided to go right into my PhD while I was still teaching. But to get experience teaching on a college level on my CV, that's when I started teaching at Hofstra. Since I was teaching full-time during the day and at night, Bob would drive me to Hofstra. And he would sit in the office because I was teaching to, what, 11 o'clock?
11 o'clock at
11 o'clock
night.
At night.
Like 7 to 11.
And my mentor, Ruth Pergosi, was often staying late. So I had Bob and then I had Ruth talking to Bob. Bob would bring a little TV along with his book. In addition to that, I also did a great deal of writing. None of it, unfortunately, about Hofstra. But I started that in 81. And I say I wrote until about 3 or 4 years ago. I was publishing regularly. Do you know that Bob's picture is on the Unispan?
I brought that up.
Okay, good.
I just mentioned that.
Yeah. That was very cool. Our daughter babysat for, was it the Dean of Students? And she babysat for 3 or 4 of the administrators. So she was very deeply involved in Hofstra as well. And came away with the exact same feeling. She met her husband there.
Something in the water at Hofstra. And yes, I do know that Bob's picture's on the Unispan because that's how I found Bob for this piece. I was thinking, who'd be good alumni to bring in? And I saw Bob's picture. Ruth, as you mentioned, Ruth Pergosi, her picture's also up on the Unispan.
I know. I spoke at her memorial service.
As Lydia mentioned, you've put together a variety of publications and writing yourself. We discussed Bob working in comic books. Tell us about the kind of publications you put together.
Probably over 100 parts or all of textbooks for major publishers, McGraw, Macmillan, Simon & Schuster, that kind of stuff. Books for ages K through college on all sorts of variety of subjects. I also wrote, I think it's 18 Complete Idiot's Guides, which led our son to call me the queen of the idiots, because he's quite a witty lad. Only one dummies book, though. Bob and I collaborated on a book.
Yes. Office Politics.
Complete Idiot's Guide to Office Politics. We collaborated on that one. So it's been a lovely, lovely career. It really has been. I've enjoyed and made very good friends through it. Some of the books I've done, I've called on our old Hofstra buddies to do little pieces, you know, photography and stuff like that. Yep, I did a lot of writing. Bob did a lot of writing. We raised two kids. We did a ton of community service. We're still doing a ton of community service. I'm on the library board. I was a Girl Scout leader. Bob was a Boy Scout badge counselor. And did you do money for them?
Yeah,
and treasurer. Because both of our kids went through Scouts. What else am I on? Oh, I volunteer at the Walt Whitman Birthplace. I'm an educator and a docent there.
Yeah.
Oh, volunteer?
Oh, the volunteer notary public at the Farmingdale Library.
And he teaches.
And yeah. I teach the comic book class at Farmingdale.
So we're pretty deeply embedded in the community as well as Hofstra.
And that's so beautiful to see. And even hear you guys talk to each other, the way it bounces off. Like it's very beautiful to hear and witness, you know. So even as a couple, you've collaborated on projects, as you mentioned. What is it like co-authoring together? Is it hard? Is it easy?
Bob and I have very different skill sets. Bob is very creative in the sense of plotting, characterization, setting, theme. He's a storyteller. I am not. I'm not narrative. I'm expository and persuasive. I do a lot more of instructions. I do more humor than he does. But we're both very good at editing and proofreading. And we both accept criticism and edit each other's work. Bob just edited something that I wrote. He's a very good close reader, which is and he's not afraid to say, this isn't working, what does this mean? So it's not, you know, wait, this is really good, you know. No, it's like, you need to fix this, this, and this. So we really do have complementary skill sets. I've only written half a dozen stories. I don't do that. And Bob is all story. Yeah.
The collaboration we did on the Idiot's Guide to Office Politics, Lori was much more familiar with the structure. I was more, okay, here's a story about that fits this. Here's something that happened that fits that. We want to talk about this happened in the office. So a lot of mine came from personal experience in an office environment. She did the actual, you know, laying out and the writing of the book. And then I went back and proofed and edited.
You know what it really, it's like Bob does a lot of puzzles. So we really write like a puzzle. Mm. Bob was creating pieces and I was fitting them into the frame.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there would be sometimes where there would be, you know, a situation that we wanted to cover in the book. And it was like, well, what story do we have that fits this? And,
exactly.
You know, I'd be able to go back and say, oh, well, we had this. Yeah. And then there were other ones where it was like, we have to use this story.
Yep.
And so we created the narrative that went with that story to use it as an example.
So we have complementary skills, but they are different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what made you both come together and say, let's work on a project like this? And why the topic of office politics?
Because we have two children and they needed braces. Okay. And they both went to college. We sent Sammy to Hofstra. Our son went to Princeton. And, you know, kids are expensive. You know, what makes you want to write? The answer is they give you money.
Yeah. This particular one, I think they had a variety of topics they wanted. You had been doing quite a few of them. And yeah. Office politics was one that we looked at and said, well, I can't do this by myself.
Exactly.
It's I don't have the experience in the background. And I said, but I do.
Exactly.
And so that's it made sense for us to do it together.
And I'm sure we had to buy one kit or the other something.
Oh, undoubtedly. So.
Yeah. Lydia, my daughter and I had booked a trip to South Africa and then COVID hit. So we couldn't go.
Oh, no. Oh, goodness.
Yeah.
Oh, why? Oh, it would have been a pleasure to have you.
South Africa is a
wild to offer.
Country's gorgeous. Yeah.
Especially Cape Town, because I live in Cape Town. I know Cape Town. Are you thinking of coming down again? Probably.
The problem, our daughter married a marvelous man. He's in the military. And So every 2 years they move.
Wow. And, you know, talking about your family and, you know, it's so beautiful. Like, what was it like, you know, raising a family with, well, both pursuing such demanding creative careers? Was it hard?
It was very much a juggling act.
Yeah.
Lori had the advantage of being teaching at that point at Farmingdale State, which is only 2.5 miles away. I was working in New York City, so I was subject to the Long Island Railroad and the subways and getting back and forth to the city. So much more of it was in her hands on a day-to-day basis. You know, one of the kids got sick or something. I mean, she was 10 minutes away. I was a good hour plus. So the weekends were always busy. I mean, we always had something we were doing or somewhere we were going. So we, you know, we it was really a juggling act. It's like, okay, this one has to go here. All right, well, I'll take this one. You know, you take that one.
Yeah, but the thing that really worked in our favor, other than the fact that I was home, Bob is an owl and I am a lark. And by that, I mean, I get up very, very early and I'm Little Miss Cheerful. By 8 o'clock at night, I'm done. Bob sleeps late, but he's still very human at 10, 11, 12, 1 o'clock at night. So when our kids, our son took a lot of classes and was always going to school early. So I was up at 6, you know, could get him there. It was no big deal. But when they were in the place and they were going till 8, 9, 10, 11 o'clock at night, Bob was sitting there, even though he had to get up at 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock in the morning. You were sitting there.
Getting up and...
Yeah. So he was, you know, he could drive past 8 o'clock and I was just blotto. One of the coolest things, though, we ever did was when our son was 11 years old, I had him take the SATs. because we knew he was bright. And he got into an elite summer camp program at Johns Hopkins. It's called the Center for Talented Youth. And we went down to see it. It was incredibly expensive, ridiculously expensive. And that would have put a strain on our budget. So I decided to write, to create a class and sell it to them on the proviso that they hired me to teach it. And it's a class in writing, a 3-week class in writing. So I went down, I taught the first week. I really didn't like it. I actually detested it.
Well, you proposed it as the two of us teaching.
Yes.
So
Bob was not happy about giving up his vacation, but I also was not. I thought, well, you know, we'll see what happens. Mm-hmm. And Bob's mother was marvelous. She came and she stayed with our daughter. And I missed our daughter. I missed my home.
Living in the dorm.
Oh my! I had been a commuter to Hofstra. I'd never lived in a dorm. So I said to Bob, this is not working for me. The kids were 11 or 12.
Yeah.
So Bob comes down and...
And I taught the second week, and I really liked it. And then Lori came back because we had set it up that she would do the first week, I would do the second, then she would come back and do the third, come down at the end, and together we would meet with the parents of the students and that. So the following year, she said, oh, I'll do 1 week, you do two. And so she did the first week, and then I came down and did the second and third. And we did that for the next 5 years. And then I left D.C. and started doing the class all by myself because Lori said, I've had enough of this. You want to go live in a dorm for 3 weeks, you go right ahead. And so I'm still doing it today. Sammy has worked for CTY. She worked first as an RA. Now she's the assistant site director at the same site where I am. Oh, yes. And our grandson last summer was his first year as a CTY student. So we've come full circle.
Yeah.
32 years.
He went through the whole program. And when he aged out, he became a teaching assistant there for 2 years.
2 years.
2 years. So we have been with this program.
Since 1993.
Since 1993. Yeah.
The thing about the writing class, when Lori proposed it, she wanted to call it How to Write Good.
Yeah.
And they decided that wasn't really an appropriate name for a serious course, and they changed it to Writing and Imagination.
Like, as with Hofstra, we've made some very good friends through the program. I mean, it's 30 years.
Well, so have both our kids.
And so both our kids found their best friends through the program. Yeah. Yeah. Our grandson took
robotics.
This year it's engineering?
Yeah.
Engineering. It's been a really nice thing. It really has been.
And something else I wanted to touch on was, because we've mentioned writing, but I don't think, Lori, we haven't touched it, because we'll talk more about your teaching careers and why it's such a passion of yours. But we haven't really touched on, Lori, how you got into the writing business in the first place and how you got into The Complete Idiot's Guide and writing all these books. How did that come about for you? I don't think we really touched on how you really got into it, because you went...
Was I was teaching in Comac, and I couldn't find a book to use for AP English. So I said, because I was young and foolish, I'll write one. I did. And then I had to find someone to publish it. So I went and got a book. I think it's probably still published. It's called Literary Marketplace, LMP. And I went through the book to find publishers. And I sent letters to every single publisher that I thought would want my book. Of course, what happened was Arco bought the book, which had been the first name in the book. And I got myself all the way down.
Yeah.
Alphabetically. I got myself all the way down to like the T's. And I became friends with the editor at Arco, a woman named Linda Burnback, who was my first editor. She's still a good friend. She's a wonderful, wonderful editor, a great, great friend. And because you meet one person, you meet two people, you meet three people. And one of those editors, Gary, went off and started doing The Idiot's Guide. One of those went off and did The Dummies. One of those went here. One of those went there. And then I formed a group. I called it Hacks at Lunch. And it was a lunch group where 10 to 50 of us would get together and we would share industry tips. Once a month, we met in the city, and whoever was around would come in and we'd have lunch. Met more people and started working for more and more publishers through my friends. Subsequently, that group went online because, you know, everybody's scattered all over the place. And we still keep in touch, many of us. One of my good friends is in Hickory, North Carolina. I did a ton of Cliff Notes with her, Mary Ellen Snodgrass. And, you know, this one introduces that one, who knew this one, who knew that one. And the thing just grew. A lot of it was socializing. It was forming groups. The same thing that we did at Hofstra. Mm-hmm. We had our newspaper group. We had our yearbook group. We had our service desk group. You know,
well, it was all just the one, everybody who was in the student center, all the organizations.
One of the most fun things that we did, which tells you what life was like in the 70s, is when we put the newspaper to bed, we got free dinner in the cafeteria, which we thought was really something.
Well, because it was Monday. It was steak night.
Steak night. I mean, the steak, you could have, you never know about the steak, but we thought that was really cool. Ironically, one of our friends from the newspaper, Pat Calabria, went on to become a vice president at Farmingdale State. He just retired. So I knew Pat from Hofstra, and then 20, 30, 40, 50 years later, I worked with Pat for decades at Farmingdale. So it was a lot of that kind of stuff, you know. Same thing with the writing. You make a friend. Richard, Lydia, I'm sure you're doing the same thing. You know, you connect with somebody who connects with someone who connects with someone who knows someone, and, you know, you get a job through that person.
And what would you say, this is a question for each of you, what would you say you both learned most about your craft, whether it was Bob with storytelling, Lori with you writing in grammar and punctuation, all of this? What did you learn more about your craft by teaching and getting knowledge from students? Because I've heard from people who work in higher education, the students teach you as much as you teach them. So what did you learn about your craft?
Well, right now, of course, it's in the toilet with AI, but let's not get into that. I've had some incredibly brilliant students. My first year, I had a student named Fred Church. He's still a friend. I believe he's the chancellor of Ohio State. He's an economist. He read so widely and introduced me to stuff I've never heard of, because my reading had been very narrow. It had just been in American and British literature. That's my PhD. Primarily, I would say right now, from what my students, I'm not learning about craft. I'm learning about popular culture, because the kids keep you young. And I'm learning our own children and my students about things people say, things people do, you know, the shows we watch versus the shows they watch, the movies we watch versus the movies they watch, a lot of that. But my preparation, I mean, what I learned from Hofstra. You know, I had some really top-notch grammar teachers. Mildred Jeffries stands out. She was extraordinarily good. And they really, you know, it was drill and kill. You know, you learned your stuff, because I didn't learn it in high school. And we did a tremendous amount of, I did a tremendous amount of writing at Hofstra. And that helped. I mean, the yearbook, the newspaper, you know, that kind of stuff. I wrote a lot of stories for the Chronicle, a lot. I was probably writing one a week at least. And people I work with, like Carolyn Sophia, she went on and got a Pulitzer. I mean, these were top-notch students. So I would say I learned a lot. You know, mm-hmm. Pat's a super writer. Carolyn's super. Marty Scrocky, who was the PR guy at the Merchant Marine Academy, super writer. So I learned a lot from my Hofstra friends. Not as much, unfortunately, from my students.
I would say that the biggest thing I'm learning teaching the comic book class is about different types of graphic novels that they're interested in. Each semester, they have to do a presentation on two graphic novels, and the wide variety that they pick, there's invariably a dozen or so that I've either never heard of or I've vaguely heard of them and never read them. And so I end up getting them from the library. I mean, when I started working at DC, there were no graphic novels. I mean, until Mouse was published, you know, everything that looked like a comic book was considered just for kids. The entire spectrum is covered in graphic novels, and you know, they're accepted as a form of literature. As far as, you know, teaching at CTY, where I have 11 and 12-year-olds, it's just a lot of fun dealing with them and watching as, you know, they come up with ideas and you know, helping them turn them into stories. And there's always something new and different that happens each year with them. So it's a lot of fun.
one of the things that was most interesting in our lives, I think, is that when we started at Hofstra, Hofstra was very, very different from what it is today. Half the buildings weren't there.
Yeah, there's a lot of buildings on places where we used to park our cars.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really, we feel that we were there when it was undergoing a real renaissance. You know, a lot of the professors were young, very, very gung-ho. You know, a lot of the presidents were very gung-ho. You know, Richard Schuert, the stadium, Schuert was my sociology professor.
Yeah, that's one of the things about Hofstra is we look at some of the names on the buildings, like, I knew him, we knew her, we knew this person, we knew that person. And it's like, oh, all these buildings are now named after these people. And it's like, we knew them.
Yeah. I mean, I was at the dedication of Herman's building. And CTY was the same thing.
Yeah.
When we started at CTY, it was a very fledgling, really Wild West kind of place. Very, very new. And, you know, we've seen the same thing. There are sites now all over the world, literally. There had been a site in Korea, I think, and I mean,
Hong Kong. Had one in Ireland.
You know, same kind of growth. But it's been very interesting at Hofstra to see Student Center wasn't two stories, right?
Yeah, it was.
Oh, okay. I remember that.
Two stories.
But, you know, I mean, I remember.
They added that whole wing. What used to be the office next to us became the whole.
Hi, this is Kenny.
And Amanda Smith from Nashville, Tennessee.
Keep it right here on WRCT Pittsburgh.
Jalem, Jalem, Lungo Negro Mensa. Maladi. Sase, Marifame.
Unused prescription opioid pain medicines can spell trouble. They can spell risk if taken by someone they weren't prescribed for, harm if accidentally taken by a child or pet, or overdose if they're not used as directed. Safely dispose of opioids before they can hurt your family. Find a drug take-back option such as medicine drop boxes. You may find these in your community or police stations. Visit www.fda.gov/drug disposal.
Thank you. nécessaire, autant comme de noblesse.
Aux quatre coins de la table, du vin rouge et du blanc,
j'en buvais à ma soif en me divertissant.
J'en buvais à ma soif en me divertissant.
Un soir m'a pris d'envie d'aller voir ma maîtresse. Je la trouve sur son lit, qu'elle pleure et vient sans cesse.
Au cœur donc la belle, car vous attend pleurer.
Vos amitiés, la belle, auraient pu changer.
Vos amitiés, la belle, auraient pu changer.
J'ai entendu parler de bien des choses que vous déviez partout, d'un cabaret à l'autre.
Que ce serait la belle, cela vous fait de rien.
Vos amitiés, la belle, seront toujours les miennes.
Vos amitiés, la belle, seront toujours les miennes.
Galant, j'ai entendu encore bien d'autres choses, que vous fassiez l'amour à moi comme bien à d'autres.
Que ce serait la belle, cela vous fait de rien.
Vos amitiés, la belle, seront toujours les miennes.
Vos amitiés, la belle, seront toujours les miennes.
Thank you.
You're fierce. You take care of business and don't hold back. Taking care of your health shouldn't be any different. You know when something's off. Don't ignore symptoms like fatigue, joint pain, and rashes. Listen to your body. It could be lupus. We're here to help you take control. Learn how at BeFierceTakeControl.org. Brought to you by the Lupus Foundation of America and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Hello, I'm Dr. Ruth Westheimer. And if you listen to WRCT Pittsburgh, you know that in most cases, size does not matter.
Well, this little thing went.